name is Robert Hawkins. Approximately 7 hours ago, something attacked the city. You found this. If you're watching this, then you know more about it than I do. Hello? Beth? Beth, where are you?
Okay, we cannot go into the middle of the city. We can't get out of here.
There's nothing you can do for now.
Do you know what that thing is?
Whatever it is, it's winning.
Do you have any idea what's out there?
I don't care what's out there. Listen to me. She's dying.
Turn that camera.
Robbie, it's alive.
Yeah. People are gonna wanna know, you know, how it all went down.
Hello and welcome once again to Hunnic Outcast Podcast. Kaiju, bless you, you're welcome. And tonight, we're discussing Cloverfield. Jeremy Fine here, and I thought I told you to put down that camera, as long as well with my co-host, Wyatt Jones. How are you, Wyatt?
I'm good.
Yeah. Now, you're probably wondering why we picked Cloverfield, or at least why I did. With Zilla 98 coming and going, thank God, and Godzilla 14 coming and staying, and, you know, thankfully we'll get a better trilogy. I had forgotten that in between Cloverfield, you know, for some people, it kind of made up for Zilla 98, because it came out technically 10 years later, and it was a monster destroying New York, and there were better characters. Actors, I wouldn't go that far. But we got a better story, and like Godzilla, or Zilla 98 is now, as even Wikipedia is calling it, we now have a monster that I guess later became one of the Mudos, or I don't know what to think of it. Is it a Mudo, or is it something created from the Play-Doh Fun Factory? I you know, we're going to get into the monster in a few minutes, but I first saw the trailer to this movie during Bayformers, of all things. And then at Comic-Con, this thing exploded, literally. People were talking about it, they loved the trailer, they're showing it at Comic-Con. And then, of course, we got the movie itself, and it turned out to be another found footage movie. And once again, this close to, I did my research, 100 of these found footage movies. Now, the first one I saw was Blair Witch. I think a lot of us did. And then they, thanks to Blair Witch, these movies exploded. And there was one before that that apparently was a cult classic, The Last Broadcast, which I never really heard of until, you know, after Blair Witch came out. But these movies kind of come and go. And sometimes they make money, and, you know, sometimes they don't, and then we have a satire with a haunted house and a haunted house 2.
I thought South Park.
Yeah. And I figured, you know, South Park kind of closed the door. But then they keep, you know, now we have Paranormal Activity. And they keep making more and more of these found footage movies.
Well, even, then the even more depressing thing, I mean, you're probably going to mention the new Friday the 13th is supposed to be found footage.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God. You know, I do know that, well, the George Romero movie, Diary of the Dead, that was actually found footage, but what they did with that one is they didn't use the motion cam. In other words, what they did was they didn't have the handy cam. They used a regular movie camera. So it didn't give you – I mean, here was the thing with this movie is that they gave warnings saying that watching this movie would be equivalent to going onto a roller coaster. And I sat in the, like, three rows facing the screen. I didn't sit in the back. I would sit up front because I just couldn't stand people, you know, with cell phones and whatnot. And I didn't get nauseous, but a lot of people did because of the motion sickness. But once again, this is a movie that I don't understand why they did found footage. What was the point? And
well, you know, found footage, it's kind of a system, a way of shooting that allows you to bring someone into it. I mean, that's kind of the point of it, is to give the audience the feeling of being in the film. And with this movie, I think it was a pretty decent decision. Sure, I generally don't like the silly gimmickiness of it, but with this movie, I will say that at the very least, it was shot competently. It was shot in a way that feels natural, even though, yeah, nobody in their right mind would be holding onto a camera that long. The battery is amazing, and the fact that it takes a beating like it does is incredible. Whatever. Fine. It's still, in my opinion,
the funny thing is they finally answer that question about found footage, because with this movie, why did the battery last as long as they did? Well, they do have that scene where they do go to the electronics store, and HUD is picking up batteries, and I'll give it that. But the problem is, I understand why they wanted to make this movie, because between Matt Reeves and J.J. Abrams, you know, they went to Japan, they noticed that Godzilla, pardon the pun, was still huge, even after, you know, Zilla 98 and Toho was like, no-oh, we're going to continue making Godzilla movies because, you know, America can't, and smart move. So we got Godzilla 2000, we got a couple of Mechagodzilla movies, and of course we got Final Wars and, you know, Tokyo SOS. But when they decided to bring the monster back to New York City, you know, the problem is that this is 7 years after September 11th. And I said this with, you know, with the 98 one, is that I was there when, you know, the terrorists hit in 93, and I was in New York when they hit in 2001. It's a very touchy subject. I don't think they were doing it on purpose, and I know they're going to compare the monster attack to a Al-Qaeda attack because it just came out of nowhere. Granted that this monster is supposed to be a scared animal that was awakened and it just swam to New York and, you know, the army is fighting it and it just gets scared and it's just, like, big and clumsy and destroying buildings. But once again, it's a monster movie where I just don't give a damn about the people. And
hey, I liked HUD.
I
liked HUD. HUD's a freaking trooper, man. He kept that camera. HUD, he did his job, you know?
Yeah, I mean, HUD
right up to the end.
Place by himself. I mean, listen, we've all had a HUD in our group. I'll admit I'm the HUD. I have no problem with that. Long live the HUD. But the problem is that he's the one who has to hold the camera, and I put him in a different class because they should have not had him hold it. They should have given it to somebody else because we only see him, and of course, spoiler alert, yeah, they do kill HUD off. Well, they kill everybody off because it's a found footage movie, which is a mistake. But the problem is we don't get enough of these characters. Now, in other kaiju movies, we'll learn bits and pieces. We never get, like, a full backstory, but we'll get something. This movie, it's just a guy who's going to go to Japan and work for, I guess, Slusho, which is that, yeah, I can't drink just six. I will give Japan something. They're known for their beverages, and they're known for their snack foods. I mean, I've heard they had, like, a cucumber-flavored Pepsi drink, and I know they had, like, different flavors of Kit Kats. I bought one, like a strawberry and a sake, but the problem is that, I mean, I know there's even, like, a squid-flavored, and I've had the squid-flavored, you know, sticks. That they, yeah, they're awesome. But the problem is that it's found footage. And I'm not going to take anything away from HUD if this wasn't a found footage movie. And people, after they saw this movie, were rooting for the main characters, Rob and Beth, but we don't really get to know too much about them because, well, we're going to get into that in a few minutes, but my question to you is, where were you when you first saw the trailer to this movie?
Well, like you, I was sitting waiting for that goddamn Michael Bay movie to start, and I was with my friend Pat and my brother, and the theater was packed full of idiots, just rubes and morons who were super excited to see a Michael Bay movie. And then, and I was expecting a lot of pain. I've been a Transformers fan for a long time, and I was just kind of seeing it out of, you know, fanboy necessity. And I was not expecting to see a trailer that, to see anything that made me excited. And I saw that trailer, and I was just floored. I was excited. I was glad. I was hoping that it was a Godzilla movie announcement or something like that. I remember going back home and checking out the internet, and a lot of people were saying it was supposed to be a Voltron movie. And I'm like, how could anybody get that done without, you know, somebody noticing? But still, I remember being really delightfully excited when I saw that trailer because, you know,
well, that was the thing too, because you mentioned Voltron. From what I heard, one of the characters said, "Oh my God, it's a lion! It's huge." According to Matt Reeves in the audio commentary, claimed that this was supposed to be a road beast, and you were going to see the creatures fight, and you were going to see a road beast fight the lions. Unfortunately, it never happened. And let's be honest, this is 2008, and you figure nothing is safe and secure anymore. You're going to have something leaked on the interweb. And this was going to be no exception. Now, they kept this closed, and I heard that, you know, the actors had to sign things. I heard that with the script that they had to give them different scripts, and they never knew what their lines were because they kept changing dialogue.
Yeah, they had the usual J.J. Abrams mystery box bullshit. And I think that kind of backfired on them. For the most part, I don't know what the deal is. I seem to be one of the few people, you obviously seem to be one of the some of the few people who still really like this movie.
Yeah.
I've encountered a lot of people that just hate
the movie so much. It's just that, like Blair Witch Project, I liked the gimmick. I liked the idea that you have Blair Witch Project worked for a couple reasons. It worked because I knew between 1994 and 1999 that nothing happened to these film students. I knew there was a gimmick. I knew that between those 5 years that they shot all this footage, and of course they were trying to edit 5 years worth of footage. I knew that these actors, or if you call them that, were okay, but a backlash because when fans realized that it was a hoax, even though they made it their business to make sure it was a hoax and it was a found footage movie, it backlashed, and, you know, I think the female lead, Heather, was run off the road a few times. But with Cloverfield, I sat there and I saw the trailer and my eyes rolled because I didn't know what the title was. It just said January 18th, 2008, and I thought to myself, okay, is that the title? Is that the release date? I wasn't too sure what they were doing. And then all of a sudden, I go to Comic-Con and they start calling it Cloverfield. And I wasn't that impressed because I thought to myself, if this is a January movie, yeah, there are a lot of these January and August movies that come out after the summer blockbusters or after the potential Academy Award-nominated movies where they're going to push, you know, these leftover sci-fi or these indie movies, and they're going to make hundreds of millions of dollars because there's no competition. That's fine. I saw this movie because I was living in Albany and I was bored. I had nothing to do. I really did not want to drag myself to see this. After seeing Blair Witch and listening to the audio commentary, there was, as I said, a plethora of these found footage movies, and I was not impressed by any of them because, one, the actors, it was all the same thing, put down the fucking camera, or give me the camera, wrestling the camera out of their hand. You never felt anything with the actors. actors or the characters. But with the Blair Witch Project, at least, I was told through audio commentary that the actors were given supplies, that while they were sleeping at night, the director and the producer, they would show up and place backpacks of food and directions of how to talk to each other. This movie, I think, dare I say it, Cloverfield had a script, but the actors, one of them I do know is in the Evil Dead remake. And, yeah, she's in the Evil Dead remake. But the other actors, Hud, I have not seen anything since. I'm not too familiar with Hud. But there's another found footage movie called Monster, which takes place in Japan and is a tentacle creature, and it deals with Japanese reporters. Right. It came out a week after Cloverfield. It came out, it went right to DVD. It was on Netflix streaming for about, 6-7 months. It's on and off. It sometimes appears on Netflix streaming. It's about Japanese reporters that are supposed to be reporting an earthquake. And it turns out it's this tentacle creature. And it kills them at the end. You just see the tentacles. You don't see the boogeyman. And that's what I liked about Blair Witch Project. You did not see the boogeyman. You just heard about it. You got a little bit of mythology. But once they were in the woods, you would hear in the distance, because, once again, the directors, the producers, they would play recordings from their stereo, so you would hear things like maybe a few miles away. And I think when the character Josh disappeared, he was with the director at this point like 100 feet away talking through a microphone. And that was innovative. But Cloverfield, no. As I said, they have to show the boogeyman because people say, well, it's a kaiju movie or whatever, we want to see the monster. And that was mistake number two, is that Cloverfield did give us the monster, and it looks like something from Creepy Crawlers or the Play-Doh Fun Factory, or it's unique, yes, but once you finally get to see it, no, I'm not really that impressed with the... First of all, they did do one smart piece of marketing if you bought the Blu-ray DVD. If you bought the Blu-ray, they have a feature called Cloverfield Tracker, and while you're watching the movie, they give mock trivia. So what you do is that while you're watching the characters, they're the blue dot, the military is the yellow, and the creature in the movie is not called Cloverfield, it's called the large-scale aggressor, and it's a red dot, and you see where it is, where it's coming from, and how it's making its way to New York. So when you see the characters at the loft party saying goodbye to Rob as he's going to Japan, you see this thing coming. And they're showing different parts of New York City on this map. So I thought that was innovative. And you always see where the creature is going and where the military is going, and then where these characters are intersecting with the monster or how they're heading away towards the monster.
Well, see, that's nice. That helps for me because it shows what kind of thought they put into the movie. I think that, yeah, it's neat that the Blair Witch Project was kind of trying to do, it's almost an art project where they were doing experiments with acting and all that, and that's cool. But with Cloverfield, it's very clear to me that they thought everything out. They really took the time to consider what they were doing instead of just shaking the camera around everywhere. Yeah, there's a lot of camera shaking because people are running, whatever. But if you watch the shots, if you watch the way that they're constructed, if you watch, like, for instance, one scene that sticks out to me is when the main character is calling his girlfriend. And the camera's just hanging on him for a little bit. But the way that the background and the way that the camera is held and all this, it's a really beautiful shot. They do some really well-composed work in this film.
I feel like I'm standing 2 hours online to go on a Universal or Disneyland ride. And once I'm in the helicopter, I'm waiting for the seats to move when I see this creature down below. And then when the creature comes out of nowhere through the clouds and attacks the helicopter, I'm waiting for the seats to move. And I... And that's when I feel that's a problem. Now, well... It would be good. I mean, that part I could understand that they want to do a shaky cam. But the problem with the rest of the movie is that they keep going... With most of these found footage movies, they see something and the characters have to run. And you have to see a first person of somebody running away from the creature. And you have to hear that person out of breath. And you have to see the camera going up and down and up and down while the person's running away. That's the problem that I have. Because it was okay with Blair Witch. It made sense because the person's scared to hold on to the camera. But then they seem to do it in every found footage movie, with the exception of Diary of the Dead, because they don't have the shaky cam.
Well, for me, that always felt like a nightmare. Watching that movie kind of feels like a nightmare, like a fever dream or something. Like you're stuck in a bad dream. And actually, I really love that helicopter scene because I got really close to getting sick when they're spinning around in the helicopter. Well, it's... With this one, again, I forgive it simply because they really, really put thought into their into their shot compositions. They were clearly trying to get specific types of shots, and they were doing what they were doing for a reason. With other shaky cam films, there's a lot of those where it's just a way to cover up the fact that you don't have a budget.
You know,
it's just a cheap way to screw with the audience. So I can, for the most part, this is why I don't like found footage films or shaky cam in general. Frankly, I hate shaky cam because, again, it's just cheap. But with this, it made sense to me. I mean, they at least had it be a reasonable part of the film.
It should have been okay while the monster was running amok and they're trying to find out what was going on and Hud had the camera and then they shoot to Robin Beth because you're supposed to root for these characters. And it's okay towards the end when Robin Beth have the camera and they're, you know, trying to say their goodbyes to each other and then all of a sudden you see him at Coney Island and you see the thing falling from the sky into the water. But they do it several more times and that's where it gets annoying. And as for that camera, it's not a question of the battery life because we find out how HUD got the batteries, but I don't know what kind of camera he was using because you'd figure in 15 minutes or so, if he dropped that thing, and there were several times it looked like he was going to drop it, I don't know how steady his hands were because if he's running around all over the place, I'm surprised he didn't get sweaty or whatever. He's holding onto the thing. Yeah. HUD, I forgot. He was in the Yogi Bear movie. Yes, he was Ranger Jones, not Ranger Smith. Get it, Smith Jones? I watched that movie because I don't like to bash anything unless I watch it. Yeah, I was looking at the face.
That was a mistake, wasn't it?
Yes, it was a mistake, but he kind of has... HUD kind of has that John Heder face and personality to him. That,
yeah, I can see that.
And he's also done voices in How to Train Your Dragon, and you know, he's kind of been in a couple of Adam McKay movies. He's kind of in the background, but as for the camera, you're right. He is a trooper, but there were rumors about a sequel that while HUD and Rob and Rob's brother and Lily and the other character that looked like Zoe Deschanel, they're walking on the Brooklyn Bridge. There was a rumor that there was another guy with a camcorder, and HUD and this guy, like, stare at each other for, like, a tenth of a second, and that's what the sequel was supposed to be about, like another group of people. But I don't really see that working. I've also heard that while they're on the Brooklyn Bridge trying to escape this monster, it was going to use its hand and smash the bridge. It just uses its tail. In the Blu-ray version, as I said, because they're tracking the creature, it actually... What happened was there was a fire by the Brooklyn Bridge, and this thing was attracted by fire, and that's why it was halfway, I think it was in, Midtown Manhattan, and all of a sudden, I guess, fell fire or it smelled it because it's a mutant. So it came back to the Brooklyn Bridge, and it got clumsy, and its tail destroyed the bridge. So they were giving hints of what this thing could have been or where it came from. There were several hints that it was created by the Celestial Company. I know that there was a Magna, you know, a Japanese comic that's based on this creature, that a boy bonds with it, that they tried to make it like Godzilla's Revenge, where the boy bonds with Godzilla and Godzuki, or, I'm sorry, Minua, that they were supposed to bond with a Cloverfield monster. I do not see that happening because they don't go into this. That's also rumored that this thing was a baby.
That it was a confused baby that had separation anxiety and was trying to find its mom or something, like a scared elephant. Yeah.
And the less we talk about Gorgo, the better. Right. But, I mean, there's no plot. And as for the dialogue goes, it doesn't bother me so much about the dialogue because this is just, if something like this did happen in real life, yeah, you're not going to start talking like William F. Buckley. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, mostly screams.
And cursing. Yeah. I mean, I do like, here's the biggest problem that I have is that, once again, it's the military. And let's be honest, the military has never been equipped to fight a monster like this. And they're trying to make this realistic. And I wish it would have been great if it was another monster or a Jaeger or something. But at the end result, there is one interesting shot when they're trying to board the helicopter, and we see that it accidentally stepped on a tank, because we don't know what this thing really looks like. We haven't seen it up front and personal. We're just seeing, like, bits and pieces of it. And then, of course, and something else we haven't talked about yet has been the lice. And it seemed, yeah.
I love that. I really love that, because that reminded me of Godzilla 1985. The sea louse that attacks the main character in Godzilla 1985, that's immediately what I thought of when these giant things fell off. I think realistically it was just a way to give the main characters something to that they could fight close up instead of, I mean, just script-wise, that's why they did it, but on the other hand, just as a Godzilla fan, as somebody who loves Godzilla 1985, that was what sprung into my mind immediately.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I thought it was supposed to be a callback to this, you know, the sea lice I forgot about, but I haven't seen Godzilla 1985 in years. So, I'll take your word for it on that one. Other than that, the marketing, as I said, was genius because they had these viral websites. There was one of them where an oil tanker was destroyed.
I remember, like, if you stayed on one group of pictures for long enough, you just heard a big roar or something like that. And I remember, I think that's a lot of what the backlash was. They tried to do the mystery box thing, and that makes sense for something like Batman Dark Knight Returns, because people are invested in that already. People don't know shit about Cloverfield, and I think a lot of people were turned off that it was just basically a found footage monster movie.
I think a lot of people were turned off because it was an Americanized monster movie, and it was also found footage, but it made its money, and then people wanted a sequel, and then other people were glad it's only like 75 to 80 minutes. But the viral footage that I would see, yeah, the oil tanker, there were pictures of dead things all around, kind of like Godzilla 14, where there was supposed to be a dead millipede and never showed up. But there were talks of putting a Jaeger in another monster, and I thought there was more than one monster in this movie. I really believe that, because we would see different angles and different faces of this creature that I posted on the Facebook event page, and then when we finally see the monster at the end when it kills and eats HUD, I thought that there were, you know, the lice either turned into the monsters or there was two or three of them. They never really go into detail, because is it me or does it look different each time?
I mean, the Clover, the actual monster, it's a weird enough design. I don't know. I could see what you're saying, but it never occurred to me. that it might be a different one.
Because there's one point where we see the back of it where it destroys a building for the first time, and it kind of looks like King Koopa. And then there's another point where we see the military, and we see the face right before they're going to go onto the subway, and it looks different facially. And then we see it when it's about to eat HUD, and now all of a sudden it looks like it's breathing gills on the side of its head. So I'm never quite sure how many of these things really are out there, if there's two or three or whatever. They don't really go into full detail. I do appreciate how they're trying to film this thing, that they want to show it at different points if you're going to see it at all. Unlike Blair Witch, you don't see the boogeyman, I guess, with a monster movie. It would have been nice to use my imagination. The biggest thing is that people thought this was supposed to be a gigantic mutated whale. For those that don't remember, there was a guy on Yahoo who claimed that he saw the movie and it was a mutated whale, and they were already pushing pictures of this mutated thing. And I thought that's what it was, and that would have been different and awesome. But no, I keep going back to it's like finding gum underneath your shoe and putting shock eyes on it. It would have been better if they just would have shown like bits and pieces of the creature. But they never really show it in full until the toy came out. I never bought it. I think it was supposed to be $200, and now it's become a rarity. I think it's close to like $2,000. In the box or out of the box?
Well, that's another, again, that's more to the kind of nightmare quality of it, that it's just this big scary event that you're stuck in and it doesn't make any sense to you because you don't have really any information. You're just living through this weird thing and you have no outside source of information letting you know exactly what's happening. So that's, to me, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I didn't even know they were selling the toy. It was never really discussed. The only thing I knew about merchandising wise was a comic book and the and possibly the Blu-ray and also the sound mix from the loft apartment. But that was pretty much it. I didn't get anything else out of it. So I didn't know. Okay, yeah, so that was good. But I didn't know anything about this toy, and I found it on YouTube a couple years ago, and then I went to look for it. I saw that it was outrageous, and they do sell it in Chicago in a place called Monster Island Toys. But it's out of the box, and it's close to like $2,000. Yeah, so, but I will say this.
Yeah, I remember really, really, really wanting a toy of it, and then they said, well, we're only putting out a few of these, and oh, by the way, it's $100. And I'm like, I got bills, man.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this much, though. I like how they shot around New York. I understand there was a lot of green screen, but I do have to admit there are a couple of interesting scenes in this movie. I like the looting scene at the electronics store. And they show like the watching the television of this creature. Unlike Godzilla 14, I thought that was a kick in the teeth. This made a little bit more sense. I like the scene in the subway where they're running from the lice.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And I love where they're under the gray shot arch in Central Park because I've walked through that arch several times. That's always one of the scariest things to walk under in Central Park day or night because you don't know who's on the other side. So imagine having two people trapped under there while they're doing God knows what, or they are setting off more bombs or whatever to kill this creature, and we're left to assume that Rob and Beth, of course, are buried alive. Yet my idiotic question is, if they got their hands on HUD's camera and they were apparently buried alive, how are they still able to find that camera?
And it's a Hasbro toy, too. Like, it's not produced by Nika or anybody who really gives that much of a damn about sculpting or really good figure. It's just a Hasbro toy that they decided to do a really limited run of. And then it comes with the little lice, and the little lice actually look like garbage. So, it's helpful.
Well, they're always going to use a nuke, but the problem is that every time I hear we're going to use a nuke, you know that's never going to end up well because you don't know if it's going to penetrate the skin or it's going to make the thing stronger or if it's just going to shake it off or, you know, they're always resorting to the nuke. What I love about something like, you know, Son of Godzilla or Godzilla versus Destoroyah, at least we're getting a different way to get rid of it. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to freeze it. Or with Gamera, the original version, they're going to put him in a spaceship and launch him into outer space. Yeah. I mean, to use the nukes, been there, done that. This is a little bit more original way to... Yeah, but this one, we're going to use the nukes. I mean, I do love the shot where the stealth is flying overhead and it drops the bombs on this thing. That happens to be... But then, once again, it feels like I'm on a simulated ride at Universal Studios.
Well, I mean, maybe they shielded it with their bodies or something. And I mean, they made it clear that they... At the beginning of the movie, that the military found it and has it as a file somewhere. So, obviously, they did some excavation or something. On the other hand, I think... Didn't they mention in the movie that they were going to use a nuke?
Yeah, but you know what? That in Temple of Doom, you weren't expecting it. Is my point is that you didn't know that they were going to have that roller coaster. That's okay. This movie, on the other hand, you knew they were going to build up to something huge with the monster. You knew they were going to see it or was going to do something. I was really hoping that after the monster destroyed the helicopter, they were dead, and that would have made a lot more sense instead of having Robin, Beth, and HUD, you know. HUD getting eaten by the monster, which was stupid, and then Beth and Rob under the Grey Arch and, I guess, getting buried alive. So I had a problem with that. And then, of course, there's always... Yeah, but you know what? In other found footage movies that I've seen, I mean, the ones that I sat through, whether I saw them in theaters or at home or with Mike and the Bots, because there is a Cloverfield track for Riff Tracks, and there's even one for Paranormal Activity, which is awesome. There's no other way to watch it. And, of course, there's Quarantine. You know, when the characters die, there's a reason why they die, because they don't believe in the creature, then they do believe in the creature, they don't know what to do, and the creature just overpowers them, and they're dead, and you get that epilogue of what supposedly has happened. Cloverfield... I don't feel that there's any closure because they're under the bridge, they're buried alive, you get that shot of something falling into the water, and then after the end credits, you get this, it's either somebody help us or it's Rob whispering, it's still alive. Yeah, so it's kind of like Paul's a dead man missing. I was not a fan of this. People had conspiracy theories about this movie for, I would say, a good 6 months. After the DVD, it dropped to $7.98 on Blu-ray, and then finally $2, and I got it with tax, $5. So, yeah, and then I found out that Mike in the Box on Riff Tracks did a commentary on this, which I've listened to, and... Yeah, it's hysterical. As I said, I can listen to the audio commentary. I can listen with Mike and the Bots. I can watch it with that large-scale aggressor, you know, where all the characters are in little, like, mock trivia of the movie. But the movie itself, no, I don't love it as much as you think. I only love the idea of how they were trying to...
So you appreciate the attempt?
Yeah, I appreciate the attempt. I like the idea that they weren't trying to reinvent found footage, but they were trying to make it a little bit more interesting. And as I said, I'll give a point for HUD. I'll give a point for the pre-marketing. I'll even give a point for the supposed post... Well, I wouldn't say marketing, but the conspiracy theories that were on YouTube. And as I said, I love that gimmick on the Blu-ray, where you see where the military is and where the humans are and where this creature is. And as I said, that to me, they should do that in more monster movies. So, and of course, I have to give another point for the Cloverfield Riff Tracks that you can download that's worth it. So, and then, of course, there are points I have to take away for the, you know, the running first person, which is seen, and give me the camera and put the camera down and help us, and the shaky movements. So, did it bug me? No. You know why? Because I knew that after 9/11, there have been other movies besides Cloverfield. I mean, there was War of the Worlds in 2005. There was, you know, Family Guy that's made so many 9/11 jokes, and I understand why they did it. You know, there was even Robot Chicken that, you know, that had the monster, and they were saying, what you're doing is really offensive right now. And then the monsters that are destroying, you know, Ground Zero is trying to rebuild it. So I wasn't so much offended, but I was just so tired of hearing, well, you know, because of 9/11, then we could just shoot anything in New York and people can get started without warning. First of all, I was there, and I can tell you right now, it wasn't, okay, here's Gargamel, we're the Smurfs, we're going to run around with the chickens with their heads cut off. Yes, I will say this much. I do know that when the planes hit, people ran, and that's only because the towers were imploding and ran away from the debris. That's the first part. After that, there was no looting, there was no rioting, there was no people running around with guns shooting it. No, everybody that I knew around that area was trying to help other people find their loved ones, donating blood or plasma, which is what I did, and just trying to contact people to make sure that they were okay. It wasn't like in the movies, or, you know, like with War of the Worlds, where, you know, Tom Hanks is trying to get to his ex-wife, and they have a car, and they get carjacked, of all things. Or, you know, Cloverfield, where they go to the electronics store and they're just looting the store. No, none of this stuff happened. And I understand the fantasy and reality. I waved it off because I understand, okay, it's a monster movie. You have to do certain things in a monster movie. But there was stuff that was tacky, but it didn't bother me as much. I am just sick and tired of using 9/11 as an excuse to either A, say, okay, this is the next big bad, or, you know, we're caught without warning. You know, there was also Pearl Harbor, for those of you who don't remember, and there was also Hiroshima. So, I mean, I hate this. I know that 9/11 is probably the most recent, but there have been other events. There was even a movie in 1993-94 that was on CBS called Without Warning, where meteors were about to attack. You know, they were going to crash land on Earth, and we find out that it was a cause of an alien attack, that aliens were navigating meteors to destroy Earth because they just didn't like us for whatever reason. And we thought we destroyed the meteors, and then we find out there's, like, because there's three of them, and then we find out there's close to about 100 meteors that are coming to Earth. So that would have been an interesting, you know, somewhat twist ending. I don't know if this creature is from outer space, if it was created by Slusho, but when we see that thing coming down towards the sky, I thought that they captured it like Gamera. They shot into outer space, and then something hit the rocket ship, and it came back down towards New York City.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what that whole point was, and now that I've heard, Abrams and Matt Reeves are not interested in doing a sequel. The closest thing they will ever get, I guess, would be Godzilla. You know, it would have been great, like Blair Witch Project 2, where that was not a found footage movie. Well, with points taken away and points added, and my final score for this one, and I have to, speaking of scores, I do love Roar. I thought that was a great 18-minute score, but the problem is this movie is more concerned about its gimmick, like Zilla 98. You know, its quality, it's more quantity over quality, but there's some quality. I'll give it fairness where fairness is due, but again, I want to make this extremely clear. I'm only giving this a 3.5 for the Blu-ray. Because that's the only way that I will give it. The movie itself, I would have given a 2. The standard, I'll give a 2. The Blu-ray, I'll give a 3.5 because of that gimmick.
3 out of 5 here.
Right, 3 out of 5. Yeah, definitely 3 out of 5. I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5 for the Blu-ray features and that tracking the monster and the humans and the military gimmick. And the fake trivia that deals with the characters and the creature. anything past that. Oh, also in the Mike and the Bots, if you want to pay extra for that. And, yeah, HUD. I'll give HUD credit where credit is due. But anything past that, I wish they would have explained a little bit about this creature or done something. But past that, I guess the spinoff would be Godzilla, and then because people wanted to see Godzilla fight this thing, which we finally, I guess, kind of did. But past that, it just sits in my Godzilla collection collecting dust.
Well, honestly, I'm fine with this being a one-off. I always felt like a sequel would have to not do the same thing again. They'd have to do something like have somebody chronicling the military action trying to kill the monster or capture it or whatever, instead of sticking with somebody else having a camera. It's given that it was a gimmicky kind of film, you really can't do too much else with it. Yeah, or that, because I'm always up for more giant monster movies, regardless of the logic of it.
Yeah, I could see that. But the last thing I'll say, if we do get a sequel, it would have been nice to be in a graphic novel, or if they ever thought about, you know, bringing a kaiju TV series back, if it was Toho, that would be interesting. But I don't see where else they could really go with this character, if it is still alive or there more of it. I don't see what they could do with other characters with this. But from what I've been researching as well, HUD, well, he'll still live on, and sadly, movies that are very hard to watch, I'll probably see it because of him. But that other character, of course, Libby, who, I don't know, she just always comes off of being a bitch. She's not so much in this. Yeah, I know, but, you know, I don't know if she does escape. And I mean, we do see her in the helicopter, and it flies away. We don't know if she did get away or not, but at least we know that she got her just desserts in Evil Dead. But we are not done yet with Monster Island, if I understand this correctly, because next week, for a very special Father's Day episode, we've got Son of Godzilla.
Yay. Oh, no.
You know what? I was watching this the other day, and I thought to myself, you know, where is Gilligan and the Skipper and the Professor? But oh, I would have, you know, they had a vampire episode where Gilligan thought he was bitten by a vampire bat, and of course he had that dream that he was Dracula. But I said this before, that there was rumored where Batman and Robin and Batman 66 were going to fight a Japanese scientist who created a Godzilla-like robot, but it never got made because they thought it was a little bit too silly to make that into an episode. I would have loved to see that. Maybe now with Batman 66 comic books, you know, they've been to England on the show. They've been to England in the comic book series that was re-released. I'm hoping that maybe they'll do a Godzilla episode. But yeah, and then, of course, we got Final Wars in a couple weeks, which will kind of close out Monster Island remakes and what-ifs for a while. But I have a few other outcasts this week. Of course, I got a new episode of Simpsonize Me. I do have an Apocalypse 4-part episode that I'm working on, because I just got done seeing Days of Future Past. And yeah, I have read the comic. I've seen the movie. But I have to say, I like this new X-Men trilogy. And I'm impressed, and I'd love to see what they're going to do with Age of Apocalypse, if it's going to be the Jedi of the X-Men movies. But I don't know where we're going to go with Kaiju in July. I'm thinking to take a break from Godzilla for a while. I would like to go into Gamera, because I would like...
Oh, yes.
Yes, I definitely... I have bought on Blu-ray, for $5 no less, I saw this in Walmart, the Guardian Legend trilogy that came out in 1996. So I want to sit down and watch this one, and then I'm going to sit down and watch the original Gamera's, because I did see them on sale at Barnes & Noble for under $10. And I think they're actually putting together a Gamera collection. So it'll be nice to take a break and see what a turtle that's really neat and made of meat is all about. But in the meantime, Wired, where can we find you on the interweb? That's a smart thing. For me, however, Hunter Galcast Podcast, you know the drill. Geekcast Radio Network partnered with on the syndicated shows. They just redid their website, which is awesome. There's definitely a lot more fan interaction. You can also find me on Twitter at Hunnic Outskirt. You can leave feedback for the show at hunnicfeedback@gmail.com. Leave a review at iTunes. I'm now on Stitcher Radio and Spreaker. As well as I'm going to be doing some administration for some Facebook pages related to Kaiju, and I will be discussing that in the next couple weeks. But in the meantime, Jeremy Fine here with, and until next time, put down that fucking camera and help me already.
Yay! Oh no. Yeah, that great crossover potential completely missed. Oh, nowhere. I'm a hobo on the interwebs.
And until next time,
Wyatt Jones.
Put down the fucking camcorder and do something already.
Yes. Good night.
Hello, everybody. This is Jeremy Fine again over at Hunnic Outcast Podcast. I hate to bring a few things down. This is not going to be an easy month for me. I recently had to put my dog to sleep, Tribble, yesterday. I found out that he had suffered from a brain tumor, and he was actually the early stages started a few years ago, and I'm kind of disappointed that the vets never picked up on it until now, but there were just too many signs and symptoms, and he was going to be 8 years old in October, and that was around the time I was going to be moving down to Florida. So the vet stated that he would never survive the transition, and there were too many red flags, and sadly, he was put to sleep yesterday. So behavior modification wouldn't have worked. Prozac would have not worked. So I do want to take the time. I did post this on Facebook, and I want to thank several people that were nice enough to, look at the post and give their condolences. And, thank you to everybody. In the meantime, I'd also like to take some time out to some podcasts that I subscribe to that are non-Geekcast related. Tim Nidell over at Saturday Morning Rewind again. Thank you. I know I keep thanking him. I'm thanking him a million times more. I've also started to become an administrator over Gojuverse, and I'll be putting the, that's Gojiverse, and I'll be posting it on my Facebook page. Also, this was an experimental podcast. I was trying to play around with the audio to make it act a little bit like Cloverfield, how they were jumping back and forth occasionally with the video. I don't think it worked out the way that I wanted it to, so I do have a master copy of this podcast, and if anybody has any questions or comments, I can always re-edit this podcast one more time. It's not a problem. I was just trying to do some experimentation with the audio to make it feel like, you were watching the Cloverfield movie. So, again, I'm going to place a couple of Geekcast radio ads, and until next time, you have my permission to listen, but I will not be responsible if a kaiju tears you to pieces. Thank you again, and...
Kid? Yes? Shut up.
Beyond the Night is the GCRN's latest review podcast. We are covering everything in the Knight Rider television universe. From the classic 80s TV series to the 1991 reunion film, Team Knight Rider, and the 2008 relaunch series as well. So join TFG and Mike and Dion the Music Man as they go in-depth in Beyond the Night, only on Geekcast Radio Network. You can find Beyond the Night in iTunes, and on www.geekcastradio.com.
Kit?
Yes, Michael?
Just keep driving.
Grab your helmets because it's time to assemble Mask. The Geekcast Radio Network has launched Mask to Mayhem with your hosts Optimus Solo and TFG and Mike. This podcast covering all 75 episodes of Mask will feature in-depth analysis of every episode, talk on the toys, and more. Mask Mayhem will run 30 podcast episodes. You can find us in iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com. Get your spectrums ready as podcasting is the ultimate weapon.